In April 2019, a crack team of Teignbridge District Councillors declared a climate emergency and swore to be carbon neutral by 2025. As a result, Action on Climate Teignbridge was formed by a group of local volunteers. Enlisting a team of wildlife wardens for help, they use their knowledge and expertise to support residents and councils across Teignbridge to build climate-friendly communities and help wildlife to flourish. If you care about our natural world and want to help, you can find and you can support the ACT team.
Hello and welcome to the Devon Wildlife Warden podcast, hosted by me, Emily Marbay. In this episode, I'll be talking to Paul from Ogwild about their community action group, as well as the Rectory Field Open Day they recently held, and I'll be finding out how that went. I'll also be giving you plenty of ideas of things you can do with the family during the summer holidays, from getting out in nature yourself to fun activities you can try at home. I'll also be talking a little bit about planning applications and how you can get involved to support wildlife. And as usual, I'll be bringing you an update on what our wildlife wardens have been doing across Teignbridge. I just wanted to start off this episode by reminding you about the Big Butterfly Count. We talked about this in our last episode when I spoke to Amy Walkden from the Devon branch of Butterfly Conservation. The count runs from the 16th of July until the 8th of August, so there is still time for you to download the app and log the butterflies you see. I'll include a link for the app in the episode notes. This could tie in nicely with things you could do with the kids too, as they could get involved and tell you when they spot butterflies in the garden or when you're out and about, and you could help them ID and log them. Also in the last episode, I talked about wild camping. I'm pleased to say that I managed to get out again onto the moors and had a lovely night up on Buckland Beacon. It was great to be out in Teignbridge. However, I would recommend a different site for camping because the beacon itself does get busy with dog walkers and most of the common is gorse, not really the best mattress for the night. I did enjoy seeing the Ten Commandments stones though, something I'd really wanted to see and tick off my Dartmoor 365 list. I also recently had the pleasure of doing some orienteering training with Emma Kunis, otherwise known as Dartmoor's Daughter. She runs a company offering walks and other activities on the moor, and some are really brilliant for wildlife lovers. One in particular I like the sound of is her Dawn Chorus experience, which takes in the sounds of the Dawn Chorus on Dartmoor. She brings along with her a bird specialist, who talks through the different songs you can hear and explains which birds they come from. Emma herself is also very knowledgeable about the wildlife on the moors, and while we were on the training with her the other day, she pointed out the stonechats, which were noisily letting us know we were on their patch, and she also showed us three of the different types of heather you can find on the moor, which are pink cross-leaved heather, bell heather, and common ling heather. We also saw butterflies and dragonflies, but these were too quick for identification. Emma was really friendly and informative, and I would highly recommend checking out the various activities she offers on the moor. I'll include a link to her website in the episode notes. Now, I really enjoyed the orienteering training, and I learned a lot, even though I already had some idea of the basics, so I thought I'd include a quick soundbite. Here you go.
So the first thing is to know the distance, how far do we want to walk? So let's say we want to walk 100 metres. And then we need to know our speed of walking, because your speed might be different from mine, might be different from yours. So as a group, I would ordinarily expect us to be walking at about 3 kilometres an hour. If I was walking by myself, it would probably be 5 to 6 kilometres an hour, unless I'm walking in very, very hilly terrain, in which case it might be 3 to 4. So knowing your pace is really helpful. So when you do a walk, time yourself. And over time, you'll get to know what your pace is. So if I was to say to you, it takes 2 minutes to walk 100 metres at 3 kilometres an hour, how long would it take to walk 500 metres? So 5 times 2 minutes.
Yeah,
500 is 10. 10 minutes, exactly. Should we do one more? So again, 2 minutes to walk 100 metres. How long would it take to walk 1,000 metres, which is a kilometre?
20.
20?
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done. So, what we're going to do is we're going to take a bearing for our next destination, and we're going to measure the distance and work out how long it's going to take us to get there.
However, Emma did want to add that if you are going out and you want to work out your average pace and try and calculate how long it will take you to cover certain distances, that you remember to use Naismith's rule. And now that is the rule that means that you must add 1 minute for every 10 metres ascent or each contour line you cross going uphill. Now this is a crucial part of estimating timings related to distance. So if you do want to learn about orienteering, I would recommend that you join a course like I did. And now for an update on the Teignbridge Wildlife Warden scheme. There has been a lot going on and our latest quarterly report is out, so I have plenty to talk about. Audrey, one of the scheme coordinators, has been busy talking to parish councils where we have not got wildlife wardens appointed, and she has been busily working with them to get more wardens on board. She has had brilliant success with this, and we now have 34 of our 54 parishes and wards covered by the scheme, with 68 wardens having now completed introductory training. The support for wardens has been outstanding. I personally came into this feeling a bit worried that I didn't have the skills or knowledge to do a good job of it, but I really need not have worried. Audrey and Flavio have managed to organise training for us on a range of topics. This has included sessions on identification of wildflowers, aquatic invertebrates and dragonflies. And in addition to this, they have provided guidance on how to respond to planning applications, which I will talk about a bit more later, and also how to effectively record wildlife so that the information can be utilised by other organisations and schemes. This training and support really has been invaluable in guiding our wardens and getting them taking action to support wildlife in their parishes and wards. So I just wanted to extend a massive thank you to Audrey and Flavio. Our illustrious leaders have also been out seeing some of the sites where wildlife wardens have projects going on. They've been giving advice, support and encouragement on the ground, which really helps to keep the momentum going. Some of these projects include the writing of a complaint to the Marine Management Organisation on the dredging of Exmouth Marina, which has apparently resulted in some rather unpleasant sludge being deposited around Lyme Bay. Now, with any luck, some further testing and mitigation will result, so watch this space. Other activities going on under the Wildlife Warden scheme have included helping to plan a community orchard on Village Hall land, conducting botanical surveys of churchyards and submitting records on iRecord. Some wardens have also been successfully applying for tree preservation orders to help protect some of our ancient trees too. Awareness has been being raised around littering by creating a litter sculpture which is now visible on Dawlish seafront. Let's hope it stops people leaving so much rubbish behind on the beach this summer. In addition to this, hedgerows, wildflower meadows and trees have been planted in many of the parishes and wards involved with the scheme, and verge management as well as more wildlife-friendly management of parish-owned green spaces is happening across Teignbridge. All great news. In terms of communication, many of our wildlife wardens are putting information out there regularly in the form of articles for local magazines, posters and speaking publicly to raise awareness of the issues around wildlife management. And of course, as I've already mentioned in my last podcast, our Ogwell group, Ogwild, have taken over the management of a 5-acre field owned by the Woodland Trust and recently held an open day. I am fortunate enough to have had the opportunity to sit down with Paul from Ogwild to find out more about the project. As usual, I recorded the interview outside in my garden, so please do excuse the sound quality and background noise. It is a bit rubbish in places. We were joined by some rather noisy seagulls and then a tractor, so please do bear with us.
Hello, Paul, and welcome to my garden. Thank you for joining me today on this beautiful day. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
It's nice to be here and see the spectacular surrounds that you're living in.
We're very, very lucky to have our little private scrap of woods, and it does help keep us a little bit cooler in the middle of summer. So I was hoping that you could perhaps start off by just telling me a little bit about Ogwild and the Teignbridge Wildlife Warden scheme, and kind of how they came together, you know, which came first, how has it all kind of worked out?
Okay, Ogwild came first. We had a lady called Becky who's lived in the village for quite a long period of time. She got interested in the Flowers on Roadside Verges page on Facebook, and she posted something on the Ogwell Facebook page, to which I responded. And within a very short time, there were two or three of us talking, meeting, just having informal chats. And soon after that, Audrey Compton, who's behind the ACT Wildlife Warden scheme, because one of our team, Bettina, knew her, invited her to come to the village. So that rather than just doing whatever it was that came into our mind or thought was good, we took her around the village and asked for her and John's opinion about the various sites that were publicly owned. So she was inputting right from the very start, and we had a list of ideas which we can then take away. And of course, since then, ACT, under the Action for Climate Teignbridge umbrella, the Wildlife Warden scheme has come into fruition with good funding. We're very fortunate that Bettina's son is actually the coordinator of the Wildlife Warden scheme, Flavio. So there's a lot of good connections in Ogwell, which have sort of eased our work.
Yeah.
But beyond that, we have developed a team, a core team, which is now 9 or 10 strong. One of our original members lives away in London, but she still inputs some graphics, and she can input her opinions as well. And we have created our own list of priorities and sought support, financial and other, to be able to carry out and do things around the village.
So yeah, that leads me nicely into asking you about the projects you've been doing. So kind of how have you prioritised it? What have you been doing?
The various sites have different options in terms of what they would be suitable for. Mm-hmm. So following Audrey's visit, we approached the parish council in July 2019 about leaving the Ogwell Green is in two parts. There's mm-hmm. a very large part, which we never even thought for 1 minute should it be anything other than for general community use and mm-hmm. leisure and any events the village wants to stage. But there's another smaller section of the green, which is more noticeable because it's close to the roadside, where Audrey told us that it was a rare limestone base piece of land that had probably been untouched for thousands of years, maybe with some grazing back in time. So we approached the council about not having the grass cut on there. And the first pictures I took are on the summer of 2019. The grass was brown. It just got parched to mm-hmm. whatever. If you look now, there's an awful lot of wildflower, knapweed, scabious, yellow rattle, because we put yellow rattle mm-hmm. in to try and get the balance right. And others, which I haven't got straight on the top of my head, but because we're blessed with some experts within our group, there are evidently about 40 different species of wildflower on the green there.
That's great.
So that happened in August 2019, which was too late really for that year, because you'd missed the main opportunity to do anything. So it happened, and then we continued with the cutting regime of at the end of the year, which happened to be late October then. And then only once in the spring, and then once again at the end of the season. So then there are other sites. The main road to the village has a very narrow section called Canada Hill. That was just an overgrown part, which obviously had been some sort of beds before. Mm-hmm. We stripped them out in October 2019 and started the process of putting the right sort of planting in place.
Yeah.
The first year in 2020, didn't look much at all. This year it's looked spectacular in at least two different phases. So we're pleased with that.
Fantastic.
And we wanted to make, I suppose, a statement where people enter the village from the Newton Abbott to Totnes Road. And there was a section of grass on the side of the road away from the roundabout where we could take, we could dig up the ground and get it ready to spread seed, which is what we do. It was hard work. We had a group session. We put stuff out to the community. We must have had a dozen or 15 people working on what is not a massive site, but it needed completely digging over.
Yeah.
We then made a mistake. We plotted perennials when we shouldn't have. We should have plotted annuals.
Right.
And we've learned that mistake.
And so why not perennials? What's the problem with planting?
Well, there's a very voracious plant in there. Alexanders.
Yeah.
And we really need that. They can easily swamp everything.
Right.
And leaving certain things in that bed was not the right thing to do. We should have stripped it completely so that then the right balance could be achieved. So at the moment, we're doing far too much work all the way through the year to try and keep the unwanted stuff down and allow the glorious poppies, cornflowers, etc. to flourish. And then right at the end of the year, because of National Tree Week, we identified a place where we could plant some trees and make a small community orchard. So we put in 6 trees at the end of that year. And that was a sort of, that's a reasonable sample of the sort of things we did in the early stage.
And I know I have been getting updates from you, and I've been mentioning it in previous podcasts as well, that you guys have, I think you even had a seed swap going on as well, didn't you?
That's something that happened this year. Becky came up with the idea of a seed library.
Yeah.
Bit of craftsmanship from her husband, actually.
I've been looking at them and thinking, I want to make a little cupboard for our village now.
So there's very few buildings in the village. So it actually sits on the wall of the public toilets, which are owned by the council.
Mm-hmm.
And people can just put stuff in and take stuff out.
So have you managed to put them in a sheltered spot so they don't get wet?
It's on a north-facing wall. So it doesn't get too sunny, and there's a nice little slated roof on top of the cupboard.
Cute.
It looks very nice,
yes.
And it stays dry.
Lovely. And, I know. I think someone at one point told me that you'd ended up with more in there than you'd started with at one point.
It did. It went right up, and now it's gone down again. And, you know, you don't encourage it all the year round, but we'll remind people occasionally as to what's available there.
We've
gone on from that to other sites. We use the Devon Wildlife Trust Treescapes project last year, where we had 14 trees from them, little whips.
Yeah.
We planted them in some new places around the village, and we couldn't have what we asked for because it didn't work like that. So we had some which needed to go in, so to speak, marshier, wetter ground. So
right. We
are fortunate to have in the newest part of the village in terms of residential. It was created with a nature reserve at the back, and there are some boggy areas. So we found one of their people, and he's an expert in tree surgery. Yes. When we need expertise, it seems to fall in our lap, but you have to go out and look for it. It will not fall in your lap if you don't go out and look.
That's the thing, isn't it? I found since starting doing this, like you start becoming approached by people who are interested in what you're doing and want to get involved. I think that's really great.
In any community, there's going to be a tremendous amount of talent.
And
if you don't have funds, the most important thing is to, even if you have got funds, because it's more important to get community involved rather than the money.
I can say I've been finding it's the communication. Involved. It's kind of letting people know what's going on and how they can get involved. And because I think I speak to people who say, oh, they'd really like to get involved. And I think sometimes, you know, we need a little bit more structure so that people can come into it with some purpose. And obviously you've had a really big project going on, which I've talked about a couple of times in the last podcasts. You took over the rectory field, and that's a big, it's 5 acres?
5 acres, yeah.
So how did that come about?
Well, last autumn, when we were talking with Devon Wildlife about trees and tree planting, one of the sites we said, because it was known to the group that this was a site which the public could go and walk around and had been used for grazing over many years. So we approached the Woodland Trust and said, you know, would you be interested in us planting some trees in there? And it went on from that, really. They had two people come and visit last October, their community person and their local manager. And we became aware that the lease on the site was going to end in February this year. So, yeah, we dipped our toe in the water big time, really.
So have you had to pay to take over that lease?
No.
And that's great.
We submit to them. Sorry, there is now a written agreement about who's responsible for what. And mainly the Woodland Trust deal with the safety and tree management of the big trees. And it's almost a case of everything else is down to us, provided our plans are acceptable to the Woodland Trust.
So anything you want to do, you just let them know, and
that's right.
They'll either give you the thumbs up or down, as the case may be.
And the site sits right next to Ogwell Grange residential home. So we have had lots of contact with them, and they are a brilliant partner to work with, because we want to, you have lots of different hopes when you do a project, and access for all and across all ages was something we wanted to achieve. And of course, when you've got a residential home, which is now building an assisted living quarter on site, you have got that opportunity. So they have embraced it fully.
That's great.
And we've taken down part of the fence between the two sites. They're going to create their own entrance.
Oh, wonderful.
And yeah, we want to be able to get any of their residents that they can escort onto the site to be able to enjoy something of a different environment.
And yeah.
Look at what is a glorious view to the west of Denbury Ilfort.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is quite a special view.
Yeah, it is lovely up that way.
So we signed the agreement in April, and that led to having done some small-scale work. Again, we've hardly spent any money. We've done it all by contacts or contributions, things being donated to us. And just ferreting out what you need, a bicycle rack from Devon County Council.
And they were just happy to provide something?
Yeah, because there is a scheme.
There you go, it's what's available out there, isn't it?
It was too big a bike rack for us, and we said, do you mind if we cut it in two? And they said, no, we've been asked that before. So part went in there, and part went on Ogwell Green, which enhanced, the parish council's piece of land as well.
Yeah, and then helps them with their target for getting more people out on their bikes,
indeed.
Don't ask, you don't get. Great.
Very much so.
And I know you had an open day, would have been last weekend now, I very sadly missed due to some self-isolation issues. How did it go?
Very well. It was a little bit on edge because the weather forecast was not very helpful.
And there's COVID everywhere in the area.
We weren't so much worried about that because it was totally outdoors.
Yeah.
And we had all the right signage, ready to use.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather forecast said it would stop raining around about 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. And we were going to set up at 11 o'clock. And it did stop raining by 10 o'clock on Saturday morning.
You mean the weather forecast was right?
It was absolutely spot on. Well done, Met Office. And by the afternoon, we had blue sky.
Amazing.
And no wind. So we had upwards of 150 people come along, which we were thrilled with.
That's a really good turnout.
We got them walking along quite a dangerous road because we'd signed it with slow and pedestrian signs, and the traffic behaved itself.
Good.
And we were able to show people the different facets, a big schematic plan. We had activities for children like whose house is this? Whose skull is this?
Ooh.
And a scavenger hunt.
Lovely.
And there's a young lady in the village who's just set up her own business in a bakery and a coffee van and ice creams. So we brought her along so that she could sell stuff on site and join the two organisations up, and people could enjoy the site, with an ice cream or a cup of coffee.
Really? I'm even more gutted I missed it now. I love ice cream and coffee.
Then go to Ogwell Green any Saturday between 12 and 5. She is worth a visit. I can assure you.
So what else did I want to ask you? I wanted to know a bit more about the project, actually. So obviously you had a really good turnout on the day.
Yeah.
And you were telling some of the local community about your plans for the site.
Yes,
and
yeah.
did you get a really good reception? Was there anything in particular that people were excited about?
No, but there's things they'd like to see happen, understandably. You know, I brought along a few of the little feedback slips. What a wonderful place with so much potential and enthused people. And others asking for things which we'd already identified, like a pond. Now, a pond is not easy.
No, the water source and topping up and the digging out. And there's a lot of
Right. Talking to the Grange and a nearby property, there is possibly a natural run of a watercourse.
Ah.
So, and we did detect last Saturday that it had a little bit of softness in the ground, which may be. So maybe if we get it right, we can get a natural supply of water.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, you have to deal with the, you know, the construction.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be too difficult, but it needs to be big enough, sort of 10 metres across, to be worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give Firmoys a plug in the hope that they'll give you some pond liner.
Yes, or anything like that. And then, as you say, you have to deal with the safety aspect. So whether we have to put a fence up or, mm-hmm. or what, we'd have to see.
Yeah.
So that's a major thing. It's a much more minor thing to think about planting some trees.
Mm.
And we are blessed as an organisation with some qualified people, both currently working and retired. We're also blessed as a group where we have about 50% of us who are retired and 50% of us who are working, because the capacity of retired people in their flexibility of availability, flexible availability to be able to go out and two or three of us meet together and do a piece of work for an hour, hour and a half, not too long, is excellent. So they have used their contacts to bring in people to look at the site, advise where we might need to have some structured management of the grasses that are there, perhaps rotational cutting, areas where we could plant trees or create a community orchard. So one of our projects was, sorry, one of the things we advertised last Saturday was the concept of sponsoring a tree, which could, if people wanted, be a memorial tree.
Yeah.
With a little plaque, nothing too in your face, but a subtle little plaque there.
Yeah.
We are starting to create a Friends of Rectory Field group as well. And there are easy things to do, like creating stone piles and wood piles and whatever.
No, yeah, to create sheets and
correct.
Things like this.
We've got five reptile mats done at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we've detected anything. We've seen deer and young as well through
Lovely.
The site. So the idea is we've cut. There was a natural path where the walkers had already established around the edge of the site, about 800 metres long. So we've cut that so that two people can walk side by side now, rather than have to walk one behind the other.
Yes.
And a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we've cut across a path across the middle. The Grange has lots of trees that they've taken down recently, as did a neighbour next door. And we've had wood donated from both of them.
Oh, great.
So we've created some circles in the grass where we have put log seats in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to do as much as possible with the natural materials that are around. So people can go there with a picnic or just to sit and enjoy the view.
And that's open to anyone all year round.
It's open 24/7.
So people can just go and turn up and see what it's all. Don't have to wait for an open day.
No, not
great.
At all.
Great.
And we've put a leaflet box on both entrances now. And we've created a leaflet so that anybody who goes in their own time can read about what we're doing. And within 2 hours of asking the village, is there anybody on a college course where you need to build a website?
Oh.
And the answer wasn't from one of them. It was from somebody else saying, I'll build you a website.
There you go.
So we've got QR codes on these boxes now.
Great.
And we've created a second leaflet for what's going on Little Green so people can use modern technology or...
This is it. It's trying to appeal to everyone's preferred methods of communication, isn't it? It's there's so many different options these days.
And although we've got lots of ideas, the ideas will evolve from experience,
of
and
course.
Some will drop off and some other things will come.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's so wonderful about Ogwild and what you guys have been doing is, as you said right at the beginning, you know, you started off as people without a great deal of knowledge or experience, and look in the space of a couple of years, you know, how far that can come, just with a bit of bit of community engagement, with a bit of research, with a bit of asking the right people for the right things. And I think that's very inspirational, really. I will finish up by saying sorry for the digger on the golf course. There's inevitably something that will interfere when you're trying to record outside. But we are coming to the end of COVID restrictions now. So, you know, hopefully in the future I'll be able to do more of these recordings indoors. But thank you ever so much for your time today and for explaining everything. I think you've given us lots to think about, and hopefully if there are people out there who want to get something similar started, you know, you can really, you've really shown the scope of where it can go, which is brilliant. Yeah, well done.
Indeed. Thanks very much, Emily.
Huge thanks again to Paul for taking the time to join me. Mind you, he did benefit by way of golf balls, since we live alongside the golf course and have a lot of stray ones finding their way into our woods. So at least he got more than my sparkling company in exchange for his time. And now, on to summer holidays. A daunting time for some families who have to keep kids entertained, and that's why I thought I'd give some ideas for outings and activities you could fill up some of those lovely summer days with. Wembury Marine Centre is a great place to start, and that one's on my bucket list for the holidays. Although it's not in Teembridge, it's a short journey down to Plymouth to check it out. The site was designated a marine conservation area in 1981 due to the fact that it has significant marine wildlife importance and was subject to a huge amount of human pressure. Now managed by the Wildlife Trusts, they're open from the 26th of June until the 25th of September, but closed on Mondays. They have tons of interesting activities on offer that you can sign up for, including a nighttime rock pool safari, whale and dolphin watching, and sunset storytelling on the beach, to name but a few. I'll include a link to their events page so you can check it out and see if there are any events you would like to go along for. There are plenty of nature reserves in the area which you could visit with the kids. Stover Country Park has lots to offer wildlife lovers, with pond dipping, bird watching, and nature trails aplenty to explore. And of course, Dartmoor has a huge amount to offer with its 365 square miles of open space, most of which the public has a right to roam over. You can climb tors and go letterboxing, relax in shady woodlands, and wild swim in the many rivers and streams. Why not get yourself a wildlife guide and go plant, bug, or bird spotting while you're there? You might even get lucky and see an adder. But if you do, please do keep your distance, as these are wild creatures who benefit from being left alone by Johnny Public. My personal top tip for being out on the moors is to remember your binoculars. You will see so much more. Of course, there's also the River Dart canoe trips on offer, which explore the wildlife of the river. If you're lucky, you might see seals, egrets, kingfishers and cormorants as you paddle along. There are a few companies offering trips, and I'll pop one in the episode notes. Devon really is a fantastic place for wildlife lovers who want to take their family out for the day. There are so many things you could do that it would probably fill a podcast series to talk about them all, let alone a segment for a single show. But I hope these ideas get your creative juices flowing and encourage you to get outdoors. And if you're at home with the kids on less pleasant days, why not get involved in some wildlife craft activities? Our friends over in Bishop Stainton, who run the local ecology group Sustainable Bishop, are running a wildflower art competition. There are several different age categories, and all artwork will be displayed at the Bishop Stainton Festival on the 11th of September. Prizes will be awarded for the funniest, most informative, and most imaginative pictures. Get in touch with the group to find out more. I'll put their details in the notes. If painting pictures isn't really your thing, how about making a bug house, a bird feeder, a pond, a bird bath, or a bee hotel? There are tons of ideas on the internet for how to go about these activities, and a quick Google search is all it takes to find them. I also wanted to speak a bit about DEFRA's new campaign, Plant for Our Planet. It's aimed at inspiring the public to get planting, helping to build back greener from the pandemic, as well as stepping up our efforts to tackle climate change and biodiversity loss. The campaign asks individuals, businesses, and communities to play their part in helping to reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and support nature to bounce back by doing something as simple as planting a plant. So why is this important for children and young people? Well, when we help nature thrive and recover, we are helping our climate and our communities as well. A lesson which is vital for our children and young people to learn. Fun activities for families include planting flowers for pollinators, to planting a tree in the garden, or wider nature activities like building insect hotels, growing some vegetables, or simply letting your grass grow to encourage plants like daisies and white clover to flower. Whatever you're doing, whether it's planting a window box, flexing green fingers out in the garden, or sprucing up a community space, the public are encouraged to hashtag plant for our planet and share their actions on digital channels and social media. Hence the hashtag, that's what you need to use if you want to share your efforts. And if you know someone, young or old, who's going the extra mile to protect and preserve nature, you could also nominate them as a nature hero. This is part of the scheme, and you can nominate them by sending an email to plantfourourplanet@defra.gov.uk. Before I finish this episode of the podcast, I wanted to take a moment to talk about the impact of development on wildlife. The more houses we build, the less space there is for wildlife habitats, food sources, and movement corridors, which inevitably serves to reduce our local biodiversity. You should be aware that future development in Teignbridge is about to be decided, and now really may be your last chance to influence what happens in your community. To look at the sites proposed for development in your area, simply go to the Teignbridge District Council website, which again I'll link to in the episode notes, and on this page you can search and find the sites for proposed development in your area and add comments up until the 9th of August, so be sure to take a look before then. In addition to this, you can keep up to date with other planning applications in your area and comment on them to either challenge the development wholesale or help mitigate damaging effects on local wildlife. Every little helps. And to finish up this episode of the Devon Wildlife Warden podcast, I wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone who signed the State of Nature petition, which was organised by the Wildlife Trusts. This petition is calling for a legal target to halt the decline of nature by 2030. Over 208,000 people and 70 organisations have signed it and made clear that the government must deliver on wildlife conservation. The petition has now been handed in, so fingers crossed for a positive result. I'll include a link in the episode notes in case you'd like to find out more. But for now, farewell, have a great summer, and I hope you feel inspired to do something, however small, for your local wildlife. This podcast was narrated and produced by me, Emily Marbe, with music by Upbeat Whistle.